Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back to another episode of the Helium Boys podcast, a serious, non-serious USC podcast. I am your host, Chris Trevino, and I am joined by a very special guest, although calling him a guest is not accurate because he is the co-host of this show. But today, he has a very special title, and that is Birthday Boy, Shotgun Spraddling, April 8th. You were blessed. We were blessed and graced with your presence in the world on April 8th, a historic day. It's also a solar eclipse. I think it actually might be happening right now. So two very monumental forces in nature coming together right now.
More importantly than my birthday on April 8th, it's the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. It's one of my favorite things when I would go to the ballpark as a kid, seeing my birthday on the wall and being like, oh, look. And then so I became even more of a Hank Aaron fan at that time because of it. So 50th anniversary of that.
Definitely something special. And thank you for sharing that birthday moment. But I want you to save those birthday moments because I have a special birthday section at the end of this show. Per usual, I always like to do something a little special for special days. Just a reminder, do not look into the sun. Shotgun was warned of that this morning because there is a solar eclipse, as I mentioned. You probably are listening to this much later in the day and the solar eclipse has already happened. But just a reminder, do not look into the sun. Shotgun, it's his birthday, as I mentioned. So I am doing the honor of giving him sort of the day off when it comes to podcasting in terms of he does not have to host this episode. We've been a little loose with our rule of alternating host duties throughout, but when we're back into the season, that is going to be a hard, fast rule, Shotgun. Hard, fast. But right now, I'm going to give you a little bit of break. You can take off from hosting duties today, Shotgun.
All right. I will take off and let you run the show since I've already got a Dado Download podcast to do a little bit later as well. So I'll let you take this one so I can take that one.
Shotgun, as you know, we always start with our two-minute drill, and that is no different today. You get to start today. I don't know what you're going to talk about, but there's a lot of things you could talk about. So when you're ready, I'll hit this timer and let Shotty do his work.
All right, I'm ready to go.
Your time starts now.
What a difference a year makes with USC and recruiting Look at the just popping off recruits left and right, going about it early, getting recruits when in the past the USC is kind of has traditionally been a team that waits to the last minute or waits later and later in the season to recruit guys and to get commitments. And that's worked to their advantage because before there was a December signing period, hey, it's a great time to bring kids on visits in January when you come to Southern California versus Michigan or Ohio State or Notre Dame. And they use that to their advantage. So they would close really strong. USC is adapting, though. And you adapt or die. They are adapting and have been able to go out, and they are attacking early and continue that this weekend with another strong weekend, getting a couple commits coming off of what they were able to do last week or 2 weeks ago, getting Justice Terry, Isaiah Gibson, that whole big settlement that they got 5 in one day. So really good to see that. So that's the first thing I wanted to touch on. Second half, the other side of campus is going to need to do the same thing because Eric Musselman was hired as the USC men's basketball coach, and he currently has two guys left on the roster, basically. Three, technically. Isaiah Collier still remains on the roster until he's not, and then Harrison Hornery has said he's going to come back. Brandon Gardner, we have not heard anything from him, the freshman, but everyone else has either entered the transfer portal or is out of eligibility, so it is going to be a brand new roster. So Eric Musselman and the staff that he brings in are going to have to get to work immediately. They will be combing the transfer portal for sure, but to see what else they can get going because, it's going to be recruiting early and often for him right now. Instead of meeting donors and things like that, it's going to be, hey, I gotta get some kids first, and then I'll talk with you. So we'll see if both sides of campus can get things going at the same time.
Shotgun, does it really matter how many seconds you were under or over? It doesn't matter. Your birthday, you can do no wrong. You were right on the money. You were literally right on the money, including the milliseconds. So congrats to you, Shotgun.
Wow. All right, Chris. So then it's your 2 minutes. Time starts now. What are you going to talk about?
I really have no idea. I have no idea. And as you can tell, I'm just stalling a little bit. But I think I'm going to start with Eric Musselman and sort of the butterfly effect that he has created with the news that John Calipari will be leaving Kentucky for the vacant Arkansas job. Shotgun, who could have imagined? I saw this meme on social media yesterday when the Calipari news broke, that who would have thought that Florida Gulf Coast, Dunk City, and that amazing run that they had in, I don't remember what NCAA tournament that was, but
2011,
that crazy tournament run, Andy Enfield becomes a star in the making, in the coaching world, gets plucked by USC. Who knew that the domino effect of that moment and that run by Dunk City would eventually lead to John Calipari, one of the most recognizable names, leaving a blue blood program for Arkansas, no disrespect to Arkansas, but that's barely a football school at this point and not really a basketball school, even though, Musselman did a lot of good things there before coming to USC. So it's just crazy to think about that everything that happened years ago is now coming to head here in the present. But Musselman, I think it's a really good hire. I know a lot of people were kind of down on the potential targets that we had up on our initial hot board, but I was talking to people like Musselman would be a great hire for USC. He has gone to the NCAA tournament multiple times, multiple runs there, and he has experience in the LA area. I think it's a home run hire. He obviously has a lot of work to do with USC's roster. I mean, Shotgun, you and I could probably try out and get spots on the team at this point, but Musselman, new era, the must bus, baby. The must bus is back in Los Angeles. I'm really excited to see and excited for you with a new regime to cover.
Should be interesting. Good. A little bit over there, Chris. Come on. We got to step it up, locked in when we get going towards the regular season. But yeah, it's definitely intriguing. It's 2013. My apologies. 2013 on Florida Gulf Coast is Dunk City. But it is the butterfly effect and, how things, when you start taking one step and going backwards on different things like that, it's very fascinating because you could take that further along. And Andy Enfield going from what prompted him to go from being in business and selling, I think it was computer software, to being like, I gotta get back on the basketball court, I gotta get back to helping people shoot better and whatnot. becoming an NBA assistant, becoming an assistant at Florida State, eventually landing the job at Florida Gulf Coast, all those type things. And, you know, where's the genesis of your butterfly effect? And, you know, how far back do you want to go? Because, you know, there's going to be so many different things. And you think about coaching trees and how those spread. And you know, those can be fascinating conversations too, as you try to look through, you know, how did this come about? How did everything transpire to create an event like John Calipari leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas? And I agree with you. A lot of Arkansas fans, it feels like, think they're blue blood. And I've never viewed them that way. And not to be disrespectful to them and say, yeah, what are you talking about, or trying to trash them or anything. It's just like, I've just always seen them as another SEC school, one that's had success in the past with Nolan Richardson and, you know, winning the championship and stuff then. But haven't looked at them like, man, this blue blood has just been down, you know, kind of like you look at USC football in the last decade, you know, or kind of how you look at UCLA basketball, you know, until Mick Cronin arrived. Like, you know, those you're like, oh, you know, it's better when whatever sport is being played when this blue blood is good. You know, those conversations that everyone always throws out, or that statement, college football is just better when USC is good. And you don't go, man, college basketball is just better when Arkansas is good. I just never considered them as one of those type schools. And, you know, give them credit for the success they've had in the past and recently with Ari Musselman, and for being able to lure someone like John Calipari to Arkansas, to Fayetteville. And obviously he's got some connections there with some people. So that definitely plays into it, but fascinating to see. Didn't necessarily think it was going to be a huge coaching carousel this offseason. It wasn't like the one a couple years ago when Jay Wright and, you know, a couple other big name guys were all left. And you're like, oh, how are the dominoes going to fall on this? SMU fired, was it Rob Lanier? And it was, everyone's kind of, or not everyone, but people were kind of like, wow, he had 2 years there. They were fine. You know, why are you firing him? You didn't really give him a full chance. And it's led to John Calipari ending up in Arkansas. So, yeah, the butterfly effect is crazy in that regard.
I know we're going to continue talking about must bus here for a little bit. I know you guys, you and Connor, Triple Double, have covered it already on the Triple Double podcast about it. So we won't take up too much of that time. But just encapsulating, you know, Andy Enfield's time at USC, is there a single word that comes to mind to kind of describe the Enfield era, which was, you know, interesting? They got some big time names, Evan Mobley, the Mobleys, lots of big men, five-star big men signed with USC. You know, obviously they signed the number one player in Isaiah Collier. Made some tournaments, didn't make some tournaments. So it's just been an interesting tenure for Andy, now off to SMU.
One word, I just feel like it was a rebuild. And I think you got to give the coaching staff a ton of credit from where they left the program versus where they took over. Now, the last few years, and I would say the last 2 years, have been disappointing. It's hard to say, you know, encapsulate 11 years into one word, but I think that there's been some disappointments because they built up an expectation and a standard that was so much higher than what they took over. So, you know, and you have the players, and it felt like, honestly, the breaks never went their way. I felt like that with this program. Like, I think there were times, now maybe that's, they didn't create their own breaks enough. Give them credit for what they were able to do, the tournaments that they were able to make and everything, but they got left off of the bubble 1 year when it seemed like they were going to get in. 2020 happens. They should have a good team, is very, very much a chance to be a Sweet 16 team. I thought that team would definitely make a Sweet 16, and the season gets canceled. The season that they have Evan Mobley, you know, a generational type of play, or maybe not generational, close to generational for USC basketball for sure. They don't have fans there, so they can't build the excitement around the program there. And then this year, obviously everything, you know, shit hit the bed, or shit hit the fan, and just whatever could go wrong seemed like it went wrong.
Shit hit the fan onto the bed.
Yeah, they shit the bed with the opportunities that they had. Shit hit the fan where it just went everywhere, as far as people getting hurt, before the season starts. You have the back-to-back summers where someone has a heart attack. Like, all these things that if, like, Vince Wichukwu in a different, you know, in a different parallel dimension doesn't have that issue, and he plays to his five-star potential and grows the last 2 years, and he's a dominant force this year for them, along with Isaiah Carrier, and then Bronny James is kind of an afterthought as a seventh or eighth guy, but he doesn't have the heart attack in this parallel dimension, and he's a contributor consistently for them. They don't have the injuries, and suddenly this team is the one that everyone's raving about, you know, what they did during the tournament or something. Like, but that's the parallel dimension. And it felt like in the last couple of seasons, it was disappointing the way that things went, but it just felt like the breaks never went this staff's way. Now, give them a ton of credit for building what they were able to build, getting guys like Jordan McLaughlin, Chimezie Metu, Benny Boatwright. One, Jordan McLaughlin, getting him to come to USC when there was no blueprint, that was huge for them. But then guys like Chimezie Metu developing him from being a guy that basically was kind of Vince Wichukwu coming in, maybe a little bit more skill than Vince Wichukwu. And in two seasons, he really took big steps each offseason. They did that with several guys in the program where they take some big steps during the offseason, especially freshman and sophomore year. And, you know, we're able to build into, you know, a program that produced several NBA players. And they were able to identify, they got Isaiah Carrier this year. He's going to be an NBA guy. They got Evan Mobley. Those are top five guys. Yeah, but they also identified DeAnthony Melton and were able to help turn him into an NBA player. So Nick Rakosevic, a guy that was three-star big, could easily have been ended up on the end of the bench type guy and became such a productive player for them. So, you know, in 11 years, it was an up and down tenure as far as the expectations and the production. And I think you give them a ton of credit for the build that they did, but you also feel a little disappointed with the way things ended the last couple seasons when you felt like, you know, they had the talent to make a run and they weren't able to do it either of the last 2 years.
As I mentioned, you and Connor have covered Musselman in depth already, but I did have a take it or leave it that I wanted to move up to this section, that maybe it's our talking point for this section. And that is going to be take it or leave it. Eric Musselman and USC men's basketball will finish with the number one transfer class in the cycle.
I'm going to leave it because that in basketball, that comes down to, you know, I think they're going to have the numbers. And I think if it was football where you're getting 20 guys, if you can get 15, 20 guys, like, yeah, that could do it. But basketball is so star driven. It's like if they don't get one of the top three or four stars, then it's hard to say that they have the number one class. Now, maybe they end up in the ranking there, but they'll be in the top five, top 10 for sure, because they're going to have to be. Like, they're going to have to rebuild an entire new roster. We mentioned it that everyone's off the transfer portal. I mean, this week it was, you had Kobe Johnson committing to UCLA. It was, whoa, what's going on here? That's strange to see, especially as the captain of USC the last 2 years. And then USC hires Musselman, but Vince Wichukwu enters the transfer portal after that. Bronny James declares for the NBA and enters the transfer portal. Arrington Page enters the transfer portal. Everyone asked out of their NILIs as far as the signees. So it is a blank slate, basically, for USC. And now, thought it was very interesting that Isaiah Carrier was there at Eric Musselman's introductory press conference and talked with him after the press conference. It's like, wow, if you're for sure going to the NBA, like, why are you stopping by? Like, it just seems like a strange, maybe he was just in getting shots up. Who knows? Maybe he just finished a workout and he just wanted to, you know, wander over and check it out. Who knows?
Catch the vibes.
But honestly, and this is a way different situation, that's how I ended up playing football myself. I went to go to a meeting because we had a new coach and there were going to be free hamburgers and hot dogs. So I went to just go get some free food and then I got sucked in. I got sucked in.
Of course it's food.
But I started showing highlight clips and stuff and I was like, oh, I want to do that. I want to hit somebody. And then I ended up playing football my senior year. So that's the way sometimes it works. Obviously, very different situations, but again, he just stopped by. He just want to get a bite to eat, you know, see if there's anything to eat over here in the Galen Center in the Founders Room or whatever it may be. And Instead, he ended up talking to Eric Musselman. So we'll see where that leads. I still think he'll end up in the NBA. That's still our projection, but you never know. There is a reason why he would come back. And the reason is that his draft stock has slid, and he's going to be probably somewhere between 10 and 20 is my guess right now. Today is where he will end up being drafted. That is a vastly different pay initial contract than if he can play his way back up to being a top three or top four pick. I think someone said, and I haven't checked the numbers on this, it was like the difference between $9 million a year and $3 million a year on your initial contract. And that's significant. Now, the big money comes on the second contract, obviously, but it's not insignificant amount of money now to think, hey, if he can make, a million or 1.5 or something at USC and endorsements and NIL and stuff next year, to gamble on yourself that you can push yourself back up the, the draft rankings. And now also it's a deeper class next year. This is one of the worst drafts NBA GMs are saying. So that would make me believe that he should probably go now. But that's the one reason why he would come back, would be to boost that draft stock, show what he can do. And if for some reason he thinks Eric Musselman is the guy that can help push him to that, then, maybe that's a reason to come back. Again, don't think it will happen, but that would be the reason if he were to do it. That's the idea behind it for anyone that would be like, what? Why would he do that? That's why.
We're going to move on from there, from the must bus and basketball. Again, you can listen to Shotgun and Triple Double's recent Triple Double podcast, where they go much more in depth on the Musselman hire and everything with basketball going on.
Well, before we move on completely, we do need to mention the women of Troy. They did make the Elite Eight since our last episode. Congratulations to them on a terrific season. I don't know if you watched any of the Final Four. The viewing numbers are outrageous. Now, Caitlin Clark played a huge part of that because she is such a superstar and brought in so many people. But Juju Watkins is next. Next year, it's going to be Juju Watkins. It's going to be Paige Beckers that are leading the way, the faces of the game in the women's college game. And we'll see where the women of Troy, how much they can build on Juju's star stature to bring in maybe a transfer or two, a big-time transfer, how they can build this program after losing some – they're going to lose some valuable pieces with the seniors that they have graduate and whatnot. And we'll see if they lose a couple players to the transfer portal or if they stick. I know we have a question about that a little bit later, but I did want to mention the women of Troy and them completing their season. Disappointing that it finished in the Elite Eight instead of maybe the Final Four or the championship game. They played great throughout the season. They just not shoot well against UConn, and UConn was able to beat them in that one.
Certainly a breakout season for Lindsey Gottlieb and her squad, just getting to a number one seed, winning, the Pac-12 tournament title, and then going on a successful run to the Elite Eight. I know, as you mentioned, fans would have hoped they could have gotten to the championship game or the Final Four, but this was a huge accomplishment to get that far. And I know a lot of people are now super excited for Juju Watkins' sophomore season. Like, what's she going to do for a sophomore season? You're right. They're going to lose some pieces, but they're going to be a tantalizing location for some high value transfer targets. And they have a really good recruiting class coming in. So it's a good time to invest in USC women's basketball right now. So great run. We'll see what they do next year. But I mean, Shotgun, just like, let's be real. Like, was anyone going to beat South Carolina this year? This was not the year to make it to the championship game. Cause that
not necessarily, but the SEC championship, LSU had them, had them in the right spot to be able to beat them. So it's all about if a team shoots well in a game, if the biggest thing with South Carolina from the little bit I watched them, I didn't watch a ton of them this season, is that when they weren't making shots, they just offensive rebounded the opposing teams to death. And then they would make shots a ton. And so that combination, when they were missing a few, then being able to get rebounds and get extra opportunities. Now, if you can limit that, and that's your game plan throughout. And then, yeah, there's a chance there. And, you know, everyone is beatable at some point. It's not like they had a ton of superstars on the team. It wasn't like some of those UConn teams a few years back where it's like you got five WNBA players in your starting lineup. Of course, you're going to, you know, be able to beat some people. Now, they do have talent. Cardoso is going to be a top five pick more than likely in the WNBA draft. And they got a couple other players in that roster. The freshman is really good. I can't think of her name off the top of my head. But they're going to be back again next year. They do lose Cardoso. They lose a couple of people. But Pow Pow's coming back. She's already announced that. They've got the number one or number two player coming in the ESPN women's high school rankings. And they've got the number 12, I think. I may be conflating them and UConn. Both of them have really good recruiting classes coming in. So they're both going to be back. UConn's going to be a team that could be dangerous going forward because of all the talent that they have that got injured this year and should be back next year. So that'll be a dangerous team to watch going forward.
Let's pivot now back into football. Started there a little bit. Let's go into USC's recruiting. You mentioned it in your two-minute drill, but USC continues to be scorching hot now. The number five team in our 24/7 sports rankings with 10 commitments throughout the week. Earlier, they picked up, starting from last Sunday on Easter, they picked up three-star Texas running back Riley Wormley, four-star linebacker slash safety Matai Tagoai, three-star quarterback Tristan Castro, and then on Sunday, yesterday, they picked up three-star running back Harry Dalton III out of Dinwiddie, Virginia, and three-star running back Dwayne Morris out of Oakland, Tennessee, and both of those guys are considered athletes in our 24/7 sports rankings, but they will be running backs at USC. Morris is going to play a little wide receiver as well. He's a really, really good receiving back, but a nice blend between Dalton and Morris because Dalton is a physical runner. Go look at his junior tape. He is trucking dudes left and right. And he comes out of that talent-rich area of that lower end kind of Virginia area, talking like the Michael Vick, where Michael Vick came out of the sticks and kind of that area. That's where Harry Dalton is coming from. So I think it's a really good pickup for Anthony Jones Jr., who now has three running back commits. He's been doing work this week. So a very fast start for him and his USC recruiting. So on the board, number five class in the nation, shotgun. And this is just the spring. You know, we saw USC go on a run in June. So we'll see what kind of fireworks they will have this summer when they get kids on campus for that official visit. I know USC, Annie Hansen, they're cooking up something big for this official visit period which starts in May. But, you know, June 21st will be their major golden hour. You know, the one where they bring out the yachts and the luau at Lincoln Riley's house. So right now, USC has crazy momentum. Number five class. We'll see where it ends up after spring, the rest of spring, and summer. But USC, one of the hottest teams in the country right now.
Definitely. And like you said, they're going all over the country to get these guys. You know, Virginia for Dalton, Morris coming from Tennessee, but also finally getting some local guys. I think that's huge because if you have a up and down season or if you don't have a great season, I think the national guys are much more likely to slide out of the class and be like, I think I'm going to find somewhere else, versus the local guys are more likely. They know you, they trust you, they've been around the program a ton, and you know they can trust in the vision probably a little bit better than outsiders if you were doing the right things, and which it seems like the coaching staff and whatnot are doing. So good to see them getting some local talent as well. I haven't seen much of Togiai playing, but I did get to see Castro at the Under Armour camp, and I really like the length. I mean, he's super long for a cornerback. I know he's only rated as a three-star, but you know, Upland feels like a place where guys get underrated for whatever reason. Out there in the IE, how many times does everyone get out to see the Rancho Cucamonga Upland game? Because there's talent over and over and over in those games. You know, whether it's Justin Flo versus CJ Stroud or someone like Silas Bolden being an underrated player. I think he was rated as a cornerback in our ratings, and he was a good cornerback at Rancho, and then you know, suddenly pops up on Oregon State's roster and their leading receiver and everything else. So, you know, I think that getting that those local recruits back in, but also getting the local guys to come back out. You know, you guys have mentioned who was out there the last couple of weeks at practices, the St. John Bosco coaches, the modern day players, like getting those powerhouse programs to be like, oh, USC could actually be a destination. I think that's huge for him. And I know NIL is playing into that as well. And the changes that have happened because of the court case with Tennessee and Virginia. But it's good to see that USC actually may have a chance at some of those, you know, the big time guys from the big time programs around, when it's felt like the last couple of years, it's like USC is kind of off limits for them to go after those guys.
Yeah, they're definitely building momentum, obviously nationally, but starting to pick up locally as well. There's a couple of crystal balls that have come in for some local guys. And so, you know, local kids are starting to take notice when you have all these kids from all over the country jumping on board to go to USC. You know, it'll make the local kids like take a second and be like, hey, all these kids from out of state are jumping on the USC train. Maybe we should reconsider. So they're doing very good work on getting these local kids back to campus. You know, as you mentioned, that Thursday practice was full of local guys. And obviously, Travis Scott being on campus also helps. There's a lot of buzz at practice. That was like one of the like buzziest, isn't really like a good word for it, but just like energy. You know, remember when we used to cover like spring games and they'd be open to the public, there'd be lots of people around, just had that energy like on a Saturday morning. That's what it kind of felt like for that practice that we covered. Obviously, it was mainly just recruits and their parents and guests, and it's not public, but there was a lot of people. And obviously, Travis Scott being on campus, there was two girls who tried to sneak into practice with us in the media because they were looking for Travis Scott. Like, that was going on Thursday. That was the vibe. So yeah, it was definitely good to see that kind of energy. And Gerard talks about it all the time, like, just open one practice up and get that Howard Jones Field packed. You would get so much energy, and it would do better visually than like a spring game, you know, because you're like in there tight, you can actually feel that energy, get the music going. You know, you have probably celebrities out there, you set up the tents or whatever. You could do a lot in that little space to build that environment, as opposed to a spring game, you know, that's not going to be able to compete with the Alabamas and the Ohio States and the, you know, all those schools. So you gotta use what you have, and what USC has is that kind of small, intimate kind of energy that it can create on campus.
Yeah, I think that's a great, and I listened to you guys on the two-star composite, and I thought that was a great point that Gerard pointed out. Because he mentioned, you know, some of the Rising Stars camps in the past where you had some of the elite of the elites partially came to USC to compete because I want to see if I'm better than so-and-so. And I know they're going to this camp, and yeah, Pete Carroll and whatnot. And I've got my mind kind of set, but I want to go compete against these guys and I want to show out, and it would get, you know, it would get busy. And so if you had, you know, that drill that they've been showing in some of their clips where the defenders are laying on the ground, is kind of a modified version of the Oklahoma drill. And, you know, basically blockers taking on, you know, someone with a ball carrier. That drill, if you did that in one corner and like just started hyping it up, everyone's going to flow there. You did two sections of it in two different corners or something like that. You got every fan's going to be over there. It's going to be packed. It's going to be intense. You play a little music. Like, it could be popping. And, you know, especially with the connections that they have in Los Angeles to be able to get some celebrities to come out. Now, obviously the Travis Scott thing was not directly with the football program or whatnot, but you build on those type things. People are going to be in Los Angeles. And hey, if you have a connection, you know, if Lincoln Riley's, you know, agency that he works with, if they know, if they have some other celebrity, hey, can you get somebody to come out, whatever, then you just start building on it. And, you know, you see, look at the Galen Center and what the women of Troy were able to do. Look at the celebrities that stop by to see a generational player like Juju Watkins. Do you not think that, you know, Kevin Hart and, you know, the rappers that stop by and different things, do you not think that people would stop by to see Caleb Williams after he won the Heisman? Yeah. Why would you not use that energy and build on it? And now they've had that energy this spring, because Aaron Donald stopped by practice, and now Travis Scott stopped by, along with Juju Watkins and Michael Rubin from Fanatics. Like these are the type of people that bring energy. And so can you use that in your, use that to your advantage? And that's why I would love to see them open up some practices and do that, especially if it's a Saturday morning type of thing and there's a little bit of competition periods. Like the fans would eat all that up, and they would be, because it'd be so rare and so limited, they would flock to it. And honestly, what are you putting in? What play designs or whatever are you doing in a spring April practice that you're worried about someone seeing from the outside? Like, I don't understand that portion of it. And I think that they're missing an opportunity to be able to do that. And plus, I would love to go out there. If they announced that they were going to do that, I'd be like, all right, I'm flying out. Like, now I know I'm a unique portion of this, but how many other people that are in Southern California that maybe they live in the IE or something, like, all right, I'm in, I'm driving 2 hours, I don't care, I'll drive up from Temecula to come up and see them practice, because I want to see what they got. I want to see these new guys. Oh, and here's so many things about Cameron Fountain, or I'm hearing about Isaiah Rakes beside Barrels. I want to see it. I want to see it in person. Build that excitement and let that carry through, because yes, you go to the spring game and there's some of that for sure, but it is definitely kind of neutered, I would say. It's not as intense. It's not as, focused when you're in the stands of an 80 or now what, 70,000 seat stadium versus in that in intense close quarter environment of what Howard Jones Field can be.
Shadi, we'll move out of recruiting, and just a reminder, me and Gerard will go more in depth on USC's new additions, this week's composite two-star recruits, and we'll do a full breakdown of what we got going on. So if you want more of that recruiting, just check out the composite two-star recruits. And you can check out last week's episode, which was pretty good in my opinion. Shaka, let's transition more into the football team and talk about spring camp. We're about a little bit more than halfway through spring camp. We have, for the media, we have four more practices to cover, including a 5:30 a.m. practice tomorrow, the Woo-hoo! Last one. So thank the heavens for me, Shotgun. And then the spring game on April 20th. So five more pieces of practice and game that we can see. Obviously, the spring game will be a lot more telling than, overall what we've seen from camp so far, as we can only see, the first 15 minutes or so. But last week was eventful. We got to hear Anthony Jones speak. We got to hear Matt Entz speak. Eric Gentry gave a really, really good interview. Lincoln Riley gave some insight in a Saturday press conference this past weekend. There was some stuff about the offensive line. There's a lot to get to, Shotgun. So obviously, I want to start with Anthony Jones Jr., who really impressed me with his media scrum, his first one for us, because he wasn't there when they hired him and did the introductory press conference with all the defensive coaches. So he was someone we were eager to talk to, and he did not disappoint. He's insightful, and he's like very funny, Shotgun. You would love talking to Anthony Jones Jr. I don't know if you watched the video, but he just came off as really genuine. He made jokes, but he was also gave us information, good stuff. And he joked that his wife has a huge crush on Reggie Bush. So we'll have to keep that updated throughout the season or what's going on and when Reggie steps by practice or is on campus at any point. But yeah, I was just really impressed with Anthony Jones Jr.
Yeah, and I thought he did come off, I watched a portion of the interview. I didn't watch the whole thing, but I thought he came off as very likable. You can see why he has been able to follow that up with some recruiting wins. The personality is definitely there, and it seems that people kind of gravitate towards him, as far as, hearing some of the players talk and, behind the scenes and whatnot. I did want to point out before we get into talking about the team fully, Chris's ghost notes have been spectacular. The what made me think of it was when you mentioned the girls trying to sneak in to see as part of the media to see if Travis Scott was in there. If you're not subscribed to uscfootball.com, I honestly think Chris's ghost notes are worth the price of subscription alone. So you're going to get You're going to get insights. You're going to find out stuff about the team. But there's also the special Chris, you know, spices mixed in. A little spiciness, a little salsa it thrown in there. So it is terrific stuff that I have to give you, Chris. I read it. I look forward to it every practice that I'm not at. And I have to go and edit them myself.
He has to read them. Yeah.
Both because it's my job, but also because I want to.
I appreciate the shout out. I did not ask him for that. Maybe I'll just Venmo him $5 anyway, but thank you for that. Yeah. It's tough when we can't cover a ton of practice. God, I can't even remember like what I wasn't really doing ghost notes when we could cover like a Helton practice in full. Like we could watch the entire thing and watch from the top. So yeah, I can't imagine what those ghost notes would look like. Probably at minimum 2,500 words for a full practice. So not a ton of football stuff we can see, but I try to just squeeze out as much as I can through those interviews. Anthony Jones, just a couple notes on that. I think the most interesting thing, he was asked about them possibly bringing in another transfer to that room, which only has four scholarship running backs at this point. But he didn't, maybe that was just him like kind of playing it off and not willing to give his hand. But I feel like other coaches have been more open about that. You know, I kind of felt like Josh Henson was, you know, he talked about, you know, we're going to explore looking at a transfer. You know, Dennis Simmons was like, we're taking another wide receiver. Like there's no doubt about it. We're taking another one. And I guess you have to say that when you have seven guys only in there in the scholarship roster, but he was kind of, he seemed like he wasn't really committed to doing it all the way. And I they have four, obviously, you know, they probably could use another veteran, but I don't know what the numbers look like right now. I think they have four or five scholarships. I still think it's a defensive tackle, offensive tackle. At this point, I think you got to take two wide receivers to at least get to nine or something. And then if you have that fifth, you know, maybe you throw a running back in there, maybe not like a high end guy, but maybe like a veteran who's played somewhere, wants another year just to, you know, be that rounding depth. But it sounds like they're going to rely a lot on Quentin Joyner this season. It sounds like the sophomore is going to have a much bigger role. I mean, he was going to have a bigger role this season, but maybe a little bit bigger than we initially anticipated. So that was kind of the big takeaway for me from Jones, other than his wife loves Reggie Bush.
Yeah, I thought that definitely stood out that he wasn't committive on, yeah, we're going to get a running back, or, you know, just that we're going to explore it. It was, we'll see. And yeah. I think a big portion of that is actually Brian Jackson. A lot of positive things about Brian Jackson, the freshman coming in. And, you know, when we saw him last year, it was like, this guy's going to be a depth piece. This guy is not going to be an immediate impact guy. And now you see him and you hear people talk about him. It sounds like maybe they want to get him a little run, see what he can do out there. And again, running backs, you always have injuries. So you want to make sure that you have three quality options. Maybe one of those is a young buck along the way, like they had last year where you had, you know, you had Marshawn Lloyd, you had Austin Jones, and you had Quentin Joyner, and you could throw him in there if you needed to. But yeah, I expected a big jump from Quentin Joyner. I'm not surprised at that. I really like what I saw last year and just thought that he would easily be the number two guy unless they went and got somebody. And I thought, I'm kind of wondered, like, do you go out and find somebody to be a number two and push him down another rung and then worry about maybe he wants to enter the transfer portal because you're not giving him an opportunity? I think he's got, you know, the ability to be a special back. So I think it's interesting that maybe they're believing that as well and they're trusting that. And maybe if they don't go to the transfer portal, maybe they try to pick up, you know, what would be ideal at minimum is picking up a high-quality walk-on. You know, the quarterback room got that in Jack Stoopen, a guy who had some, well, I believe, Mountain West offers. And, you know, USC picks him up as, you know, as a walk-on. That's exactly what you're looking for in your walk-ons. You want guys that have offers to go elsewhere and decide, I want to be a part of what they got going on over there. And maybe I think I can prove myself and earn a scholarship as my career progresses. Like, let me go show my stuff, and, you know, bet on myself. And I would love to see a running back. You know, Southern California has good running backs, but we haven't seen them, you know, pop up at USC in recent years and really recruited the area. Where's the one person to say, I'm going to bet on myself because I've always wanted to go to USC. They're undervaluing me. Coach, I'll come and be a walk-on and I'll show you what I got. And, you know, prove themselves. Like, if they could get Matt Colombo left in the transfer portal, he was a quality walk-on for them. They need at least that. They need to add a walk-on that is the quality of a Matt Colombo at the minimum. A guy that, you know, you get a couple injuries and you need a couple carries late, just run the ball, don't turn it over. You know, we're just trying to run the clock out and maybe we're trying to pick up a first down type of thing and someone's banged up. Who can you hand the ball off to and they're not going to fumble at minimum? Like, that's at minimum what they need right now. So I would venture to say they will add another body, but I'm curious to see where it will come from, whether it is the transfer portal, whether they find someone late as far as a high school player somewhere that kind of would be kind of rare with running backs, but you know, or if they find a walk-on somehow, and maybe that's the transfer portal that they get. Maybe it's not a marquee guy that's coming in, but maybe it's somebody that can, you know, transfers in as a walk-on.
Let's pivot to the guys who are tackling the running backs most of the time. That's the linebackers. Matt Entz also made his spring debut. And again, two really good talkers this week, and Anthony Jones Jr. and Matt Entz. I loved hearing from Coach Entz. Still carries, you know, that head coach quality, given injury updates. You know, I probably, you know, was not supposed to do that, but, you know, spoke about Rajon Davis and why he's been limited. And that's, he injured his other hand. You know, he was battling the wrist injury and then he suffered a hand injury trying to brace himself from a fall. That's what Coach Entz was talking about. But again, just talking about, you know, the guys in that room, he was asked who is standing out. And he mentioned that, no surprise to us, I think, is that the veterans are the ones who are standing out between Eric Gentry, Mason Cobb, and Easton Mascarenhas Arnold. You know, those are the guys who are impressing from a leadership standpoint, from a playmaking standpoint. Those are the guys who have been making the most plays this spring. And then from a knowledge standpoint, these are the guys who have picked up the defense the quickest. And again, no surprise, those are all veterans. Those are all guys who have made multiple starts throughout their career. And it's a reason why, you know, USC's linebacker room, you know, while it's coming off a poor year, it's one of the most talented rooms on the team, just from the perspective of those three veterans who could start at a lot of programs and have started at other programs. So such a unique room. They got some interesting depth with the freshman they have brought in. Rajon Davis obviously been limited this spring, but he is also another piece that can do a lot of things. And, you know, you're hoping Danton Lynn can utilize Rajon Davis and his coverage skill set and his speed. So again, very excited to see what this linebacker room looks like and how they play, especially in the spring game coming up. This will be our first chance to see them in action. But that is a room, if USC is going to have a defensive turnaround, has to come down to Matt Entz getting those guys right for this Big Ten season. And, you know, it sounds like he spoke about how they're getting better, but he wasn't, you know, overly, he wasn't, what's the word I'm looking for? He wasn't over complimentary just to be complimentary. He was just saying, yeah, we're getting better, but we have a lot better to go. So,
yeah, and I think the biggest thing is unlocking Eric Gentry for both him and Dent and Lynn is how do you find a way to get him on the field? He sounds super excited. Eric Gentry, he spoke on Thursday as well, that they are going to find different ways to use him and not pigeonhole him as, hey, we need you to do this and you got to be able to do that. But he's, you know, practicing at the, I believe it was the Sam and the Will spots. So, oh, well. So, you know, when they go to three linebackers on the field, he's probably going to be the guy as the Sam. I think that would be, you know, and now maybe he starts at the Will, but then when they, you know, go to three, he'll bump over to the Sam. So he's learning multiple spots. And I think that's huge for him because, one, he just needs to have that knowledge so that he can bounce around and they can use him in different ways. But the joy in his voice, you know, listening to that interview of him excited about the opportunities and the way that he's going to be used and that they're not going to just stick him in one spot, you know, really stood out to me for sure. And, you know, the Danton Lynn and Matt Entz have both said at different points in the spring about how they plan to, you know, they've got to find ways to to utilize him best. So I think that's big. And we've heard positive reviews about Easton Mascarenhas, Arnold, from his leadership on the defensive side and him making plays and stuff. So I think that's good. The question to me is, what are they going to get out of Mason Cobb? Can he bounce back and be an impact player like he was 2 years ago at Oklahoma State when he led them? He had over 100 tackles, all that type of stuff. And he still had a bunch of missed tackles then. You know, was one of the leaders in the nation in missed tackles last year at USC. They've got to cut that part down, but he gets to the ball a ton. So what are they going to get out of him this year? Is he going to be a guy that is going to be a tackling machine once again in the middle of that defense? Or is it, you know, there's too many missed tackles and they got to have Gentry on the field instead? And it feels, unfortunately, like Rajon Davis is just the way injuries have hit him at the just wrong times. Like when there's opportunities, when there's just kind of an open, you know, window for him to take a position or their competition battles, or when he's been injured. And like that's it just feels like a setback. And you wonder if he's just going to have that tough luck career where he never gets the real opportunity to really showcase himself, because he can never get that starting role with the way injuries are, you know, kind of plaguing him. So the linebackers should be fascinating to watch this season. They were fascinating last year, not necessarily in a good way, but they were fascinating because there was all the rotation. They just never could find the right pieces. Can they find the right combinations with the group that they have? And then, you know, if it's not those guys, is Elijah Newby getting in there? Is Desmond Stevens? I'm excited to see those freshmen in the spring game. I think those are a couple guys I'll be paying attention to on that second, third team when they get opportunities to get in there.
And just a quick note on Eric Gentry. Yeah, he genuinely seemed excited. Like, if you ever watched an Eric Gentry interview, he keeps everything kind of close to the vest in terms of his emotions. But you could, like, genuinely see he was, like, excited for this defense and what they have planned for him. Sounds like he's going to be rushing the QB a lot more, something he did as a freshman at Arizona State. And the key phrase that he said, or the key quote that he had for me, was that he said, in talking about the scheme, that it's simple and there's not overthinking for him and that he can just go out and play football. You know, sounds like a little bit of shade to, you know, their last defensive coordinator and scheme. And I know that's something you could see on the field when they're like trying to process everything, trying to get the play in. They're still reading the play, looking at the wristbands when the play comes in. Just so much thinking, complexity going on, going the opposite direction. Very excited about how it's been simplified. They're picking it up well. You know, they're installing it super slow, and he can just go out and play football. And that's what makes a good defense. You know, not that the overthinking or, you know, this complexity is just putting players in a position to go do what they do best, and that's play football. And I'm excited to see what the linebackers look like and the angry giraffe looks like in a Big Ten football. Shotgun, you were staring at me for a long time. I thought you were frozen, to be honest. You did not move. I was like, oh no, I'm screwed. Let's move on to the kind of a safety, because we're talking about linebackers, and this is one of the notes that Lincoln Riley mentioned over the weekend, that Anthony Beavers has been mixing it up a little bit and playing linebacker, which I think is interesting. He had a really good game in the Holiday Bowl, one of those standouts, you know, forced that fumble at the end to officially seal up the win. You know, I like Anthony Beavers. He's just been, you know, stuck behind some really talented safeties. You know, again, it's a very deep room. I don't know how much of an impact he's going to have throughout the season, but if he's getting some linebacker reps and they're using him in a variety of different ways for that defense, I think that's a great idea. I think Anthony Beavers is one of their bigger safeties, and that's a role that he could really jump into and play well. You know, I think he'd be fast for a linebacker. You know, as I mentioned, he's bigger, so I don't think he's the quickest safety, but in certain situations, you know, putting him near the line of scrimmage in the box, I think that's a great idea. And it just goes to show that, you know, Danton Lynn is looking outside of the box when it comes to playing around with these different, looking at his roster and saying, these are their strengths, these are their body types. Let's use them in a bunch of different ways. So I think that should make you very excited as a USC fan.
Yeah, and Anthony Beavers is a guy they've used at times. The other coaching staffs have used in goal line situations, and you know, when they've wanted bigger bodies in there, rather than someone like Kalen Bullock, or rather than, you know, Jalen Smith, you know, they would take out the nickel and put in someone like Anthony Beavers to be an extra body at the line of scrimmage or at the linebacker level. You know, basically he was playing the linebacker spot at, in some of those defenses, you know, in short yard situations. So I like the fact that, again, using guys in different ways. And I like using sub packages and stuff. I know some fans get upset. They're like, why is this freshman in the game when it happens? But I think using sub packages, you know, to take the nickel out and put someone else in, you know, those things where you're getting to get someone like a Zion Branch on the field early in his career. Like, I like using those things. Hey, you got to go through some growing pains sometimes, and you hope those aren't huge plays that they're giving up. But you like seeing, I like seeing those guys out there because I think it just accelerates their growth going forward. So I've liked the fact that Anthony Beavers has been in on some of those things in the past, and he's always made some plays. Like, and like, that was why in the Holiday Bowl, going to the Holiday Bowl, I said that he's a guy I would watch, you know, when we found out that he was going to be starting. It's like, I watch him. He's a guy that might, you know, have a real big game, and he did, because he always, since we've seen him in high school, has always been a guy that makes plays when he's in the game. So yeah, I would like to see him on the field a little bit more. I don't know how you do it, because you mentioned the linebacker depth. The safety depth is way deeper than that. So I don't know how he gets on the field, but I would like to see it in some form or fashion. But it's going to be that back seven. I take that back. The middle of the back seven, so the linebackers and the safeties, are super deep, you know, as with talented players. So it's going to be a battle to see who gets on the field in those spots, because, you know, you got Kamari Ramsey comes in, Akili Arnold comes in, along with the guys that were already there. Where is Jalen Smith? Is he playing nickel? Is he playing safety? He was so good in safety in that Kalen Bullock role. And then, you know, you have the veteran like Bryson Shaw. Can he take a big step forward in what he can do in a new defense? There's a lot of pieces back there. And that's not even to mention Zion Branch when he comes back from his injury as well. So it'll be, I'm curious to see who they put out there and how they try to use them when, you know, when the live games start rolling around here in the fall.
Well, the final group we're going to talk about is offensive line. Now, Lincoln Riley had mentioned that overall, the older players needed to play to their level of expectations, because that wasn't the case last year. There were guys that USC was counting on, and they didn't always deliver. Those veterans need to play to their talent level. And the freshmen, or the young guys, need to step up, i.e. that freshman class from last season, to Elijah Page, Alani Noah, Tobias Raymond, you know, Amos Talalele. We're hoping to see him for the first time this season. You know, Micah Banuelos, when he gets back from his shoulder surgery, and, you know, still limited right now. So that group and those veterans need to kick it to another level for USC. And like I said, we need to coach them better. I personally need to coach them better. Josh Henson needs to coach them better. So you're looking for a little bit, a bounce back for the offensive line group right now. He mentioned that Mason Murphy would be the right tackle right now, starting right tackle, if they had to play a game. And this kind of annoyed me, Shotgun. I'm going to talk about this for a second, because when Josh Henson spoke the first week, I believe he spoke the first week, he had mentioned Tobias Raymond, and people that just saw that clip, and there are people that were taking his words out of context and putting it on Twitter, that Josh Henson says Tobias Raymond would start if they had a game this week. And that is not what he said. If you go back, the question was about depth. And he highlighted Tobias Raymond as the guy they would throw out there if they needed a body to throw out there. If someone got hurt, Tobias Raymond is the one they would throw out there if they played a game this week. That's what he was saying. Not that Tobias Raymond would start, because they're starting. They played a game on Saturday. They're starting Mason Murphy and Elijah Page at left tackle. That is their two tackles for this season. Tobias Raymond is that swing tackle right now. He's the one that would have to play next. So that's why it's key that they get an offensive tackle transfer. I'm ending my rant, Shotgun, but that really annoyed me when I saw that on social media last week, the first week of practice. Oh, Tobias Raymond is starting at right tackle if they played this week. No, you did not listen to the question. You just saw the answer. And I understand it can be confusing, but that's why you have to understand what the question is before you jump on just and take a soundbite out of context. So that really annoyed me. It was all over the board. And so I'm just putting my frustration out there right now. Listen to the question before you take something out of context. Don't take anything out of context. Just listen to the context is what I'm trying to say.
And maybe that's why Lincoln Riley, kind of emphatically said that Mason Murphy would be the starting right tackle, is, he's seen it out of context and wanted to, set things straight. Maybe not. But, I think that was notable that Mason Murphy would be the starting right tackle right now. And it sounds like he's having a good spring. I think the most notable thing, though, was when Lincoln Riley this weekend said that Jonah Monheim is further along than expected and talked about how, Monheim was better at tackle than he was guard. Justin Dedich was better at guard than he was center. But he said Monheim just is really taking it. His snaps are good. He's really, further along than they would anticipated. So I think that's a huge boost for the potential of the offensive line. And also for Miller Moss, is to have, a cerebral player in front of him like Jonah Monheim and, those guys working together to be able to produce an offensive line that that can protect Miller Moss. So, and, they can identify things at the front, can, make the right calls, align the protections in the right way so that Miller Moss is getting, protected as much as possible. So I thought that really stood out. And also him mentioning that the older players need to, play the best. They need to be leaders. They need to set the tone. And that wasn't necessarily the case last year. So Lincoln Riley saying that. So you start looking at, all the veteran guys that were on the offensive line, Justin Dedich, Michael Tarquin, and Jarrett Kingston. And maybe even before that with Bobby Haskins, bringing him in. And it makes me wonder, they've gone to the transfer portal the last 2 years to get offensive linemen, veteran offensive linemen. And it's been up and down results. Does that shy them away? Does that make them want to trust in Alani Noah and, Amos Talalele, Gino Quinones at that right guard spot and want to trust, more in Mason Murphy? Because they've kind of, it's been good, but there's been bad spots in it. And they, from the transfer portal, and you're finding out about that on the fly more. Especially if you take someone in this later transfer portal window. So that makes me wonder if they are indeed going to go out and get someone from the transfer portal. And is that someone they expect to start immediately? Or is it someone that is a younger piece like Pregnon was, who, hey, we're going to throw him in the mix and he's going to battle. And if he wins the spot, he wins the spot. I think that was a little bit different than like Kingston and Tarquin and Haskins. Is like, these guys are starters at other schools. It's their last season, except for Tarquin, he had two, but that they're going to come in and they're going to be starters. Now we just got to find a spot for them. So I think that'll be interesting to see, when this portal window opens and when some other players go in, who does USC go after? Who are they in talks with to try to add to the roster?
For me, looking at it, I think they're going after the older established starter. And again, offensive tackles, starting caliber offensive tackles, really hard to get, really hard. They don't jump into the portal that often. And when they do, they get scooped up real quick. So
except I think that's SMU what they need. Except for the SMU
guy. Except for the SMU guy. Yeah. yeah, if they can get him, if they can get him locked up, that would be a huge deal. I think you make him your left tackle. You kick Elijah Page to right tackle. You put Mason Murphy at that other guard spot at right guard. And I think that's your O-line. I think that's a good O-line. I think that's a blend of veteran experience, and then obviously, the future pieces with Elijah Page and, Mason Murphy still relatively young. I know he has some starts, but, still a guy that can grow into something really good. Just needs to find that consistency wherever he's, he's bounced around from right tackle, left tackle, guard. I think he's still just kind of looking for that spot where he can kind of hone in and make his own. But, him having that versatility is also great. But again, I think if you can land a home run tackle in the spring window, I think you're off at a really good sport. The depth still a little shaky, but at least you have more experience and a solid starting unit to work with moving forward in 2024. Shotgun, anything else you want to talk about spring ball before we take our break and then get into some questions?
Marcus Bryant is the tackle from SMU, just to put his name out there. I wonder maybe if he was waiting on the Andy Enfield transaction to have, so he can be, you know, is there a straight up trade here going on? You know, is he a player to be named later?
Right.
You know, were they waiting for that to go through before, you know, Marcus Bryant could be traded to USC? Obviously, that's not real, but, you know, maybe that's what it was.
Or maybe he wants to play basketball for Andy Enfield at SMU because he's massive. I believe he's 6'9". So 6'8". Yeah. You've seen the guy from NC State. DJ Burns, is that his name?
Yep.
You know, hooping it up. There's a lot of like, oh, this guy could play tackle in the NFL. So I don't know. Maybe Marcus Bryant wants to go to the hardwood over the gridiron moving forward.
If I was the SMU coaches, I might, you know, reach out and say, hey, is he available?
Shotgun, we are going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to do some listener questions. And then I got a bunch of birthday goodie questions to ask you and some take it or leave it. Sound good?
All right. Sounds like a plan.
We'll be right back after these messages.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Shotgun, we are back. We are back. Let's jump into some questions. I feel like you're still adding them as we go, making the list longer and longer. There have been a couple. There have been a couple. Oh, not too bad. Not too bad, but Let's jump into these right now. Let's see. De La Cruz, how much of Corey Foreman not working out had to deal with the program versus the player? Was there something USC could have done to maximize his undeniable talent more? This is an interesting question. I feel like we have faced similar questions about this. I don't want to put it all on Corey, but I think some of it does fall into the player, but also I think more of it falls into the program as well. I mean, the program when he arrived, you know, was in a much different spot, much different place. I think he just never found an ideal position for him to play, bouncing around multiple times. So I would put it more on the program than the player, but I do think there is some little bit of column A, column B in this situation.
I think it's, remember when Corey Foreman signed, USC put up billboards and the program was needing him to be a savior of the program at that time to say, hey, local recruits come, look what, you know, follow Corey type of thing. And he's not a guy that needed that attention. He needed to be fostered in a program. You know, he was initially committed to Clemson. And I think if he would have went to Clemson, I don't know about Clemson, honestly. I don't know enough about the program, but I feel like he would have been fostered there better, whereas he wasn't being looked at of, this guy has to make plays for us, this guy has to take off for us to do something. It was more like he would be one of the other defensive linemen. You know, if he would have been at Georgia or he'd have been at Alabama where, you know, he wasn't being pressured to, you know, produce immediately, I think would have been better for him. But also there's things that he could have done to produce better. Like his weight dropped, this season. He got slimmer and went to the edge, and he probably needed to bulk up and go inside versus, you know, do the reverse of what he was doing. And, you know, who's to blame for that? Is that the coaching staff? Is that the player? I don't know. But, you know, when he was in there, we would still see flashes. And I hope he has a tremendous season at Fresno State and just kills it up there. He's a great kid. He's very introspective. And sometimes too much introspective and gets in his own head. He is a kid that thinks about a lot of things, and you can listen to some of the podcasts he's been on in the past and talking about, you know, the pressures of being that number one player and all those type of things. And I think maybe he would have been better suited going somewhere where he was not looked at as the number one guy. Or if his ranking was 11, if he would have been the 11th player in the class versus the number one guy and having all that extra pressure added to him, I think would have been better for his development and his psyche. But you can't take those things away. That's part of the story. And so now we'll see if he can write the next chapter at Fresno State. USC obviously has moved on. We'll see if Corey Foreman can and go up there and kill it. And hopefully he does.
Our next question comes from Anthony in LA. Your opinion on the right tackle competition, is it Murphy Raymond battle? Is it so uncertain that the transfer could come in and win the spot? Obviously, we talked about this a little bit. It's Mason Murphy's job to lose right now. That's not factoring in a transfer at this point. If they get a transfer, we can reestablish that. But I'm operating under the thought that they are going to be tackling Skurry. They're going to be targeting someone that can play left tackle as to not put so much on Elijah Page. But right now, Mason Murphy, that's his job. I wouldn't call it a Murphy Raymond battle, but Raymond is that first tackle off the bench, as we mentioned earlier in the show. So the transfer, whatever transfer they get, that'll change a lot of things. But for right now, it's Mason Murphy's job at right.
Yeah, and I still am a believer in Mason Murphy. I've said this before, but he was relatively raw coming into USC. He hadn't played football for very long coming in. He'd only played for a couple of seasons. So I thought he had the learning curve was vast. You've seen him take big strides and become part of that rotation. I think that was huge for him. And I think there's still another big jump for him. And I think he could take that this season and become, you know, that starting right tackle. Now, the question, and Gerard talks about this a lot, is he better suited for tackle or is he better suited for guard? Ideally, you figure that out this spring, and then you can identify in the transfer portal where you want to add a piece, whether you want to get a guard or whether you want to get a tackle, and you have your choice. That's the ideal situation for USC. If you don't think that Mason Murphy is ready to be the tackle or you think he's better suited to be a guard, then you go with the tackle. If it's the other way, I think that's the ideal. We'll see how it actually plays out. But I think that Mason Murphy can be a really good offensive lineman at USC. I think he still has another jump that he can take, and hopefully we see that from this spring to the fall.
Mario asks, are there members of the women's basketball team expected to enter the transfer portal? It seemed like the team had great chemistry despite the bench shrinking down the stretch. Looking forward to seeing the players develop.
I think this will depend on, you know, what those exit interviews, because I could definitely see some players entering. There were some players that didn't play a ton. Taylor Bigby is, you know, and a couple of these players have already transferred once, so it's not like they're immune to going into the transfer portal. But Taylor Bigby is someone who saw her minutes decrease late in the season. What is she being told in that exit interview? Is it going to be that, hey, you're a starter, we need you to take your game to this next level, blah, blah, blah? Or they're telling her, we got these freshmen coming in, you're going to be behind them, you know. And then same thing with Dominic Darius, you know, coming over, transfer from UCLA, thought she might get a little bit more run than she ended up getting. Those are the two that I would keep my eye on. I think Larissa Akinwafu knows her place at USC and what is being expected of her. Kayla Williams is an interesting one. Will she finish at USC? She is a senior, but I believe she has one more year of eligibility. So is she done? Do they want her back? Does she, if USC doesn't want her back, does she want to play somewhere else? I think those are all possibilities. So it's those players that weren't necessarily getting a ton of playing time late in the season, that's, you know, are the ones that you got to look at and see if they make a move.
This question comes from Jude. What are the realistic expectations for USC football defense next year under the first year DC Danton Lynn shotgun? This is going to be a very popular question. We get through the summer and the fall going to the first game. Realistic expectations. I mean, where were we operating? They were at, they were like the 90th ranked defense or something like that in terms of,
I think it was worse than that, but
worse than that.
It was bad.
It was bad. I don't know how to top 60 defense. You know, if you're their top 60, they're like number 57 or something, or 63. I think you would take that in a heartbeat. So that's kind of my baseline for right now.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking up their scoring defense. They were 118th. I mean, I think you're talking about yards per play, which is on the NCAA website, which is what I'm looking at. But, you know, they were in the hundreds in several categories. And that's just unacceptable. I mean, realistic expectations are that they can do what UCLA did last year. That is a very high expectation, but it's realistic because we saw it just happen. Now, USC does not have Lea Tulatu. They do not have the Murphy twins. They do not have that front in the same regard that UCLA had as far as veteran guys that could plug in right away. But they have talent. They have talent. They brought in talented players. It's a big question for me is what impact will Isaiah Rakes have? What impact he has could help unlock Barry Alexander or force USC to have to use Barry Alexander like they did last year and not be able to play him to his full potential. So I think that's a huge portion of it. But the realistic expectation is we just saw what is capable last year for UCLA, what Danton Lynn was able to do there. So that's a realistic expectation for me. Is for them to turn into, at minimum, a top 40 defense. Like, and if they do, with the offense USC has, there's no reason they can't suddenly be, you know, an elite team once again. Now that's going to be challenging with the schedule they have, but it's quite possible.
Stop the Crazies asks a very detailed question of top 10 USC basketball players of all time, men and women. Man, shotgun, I don't know if you have the time to do this right now. Maybe it's just top three.
I mean, might be a future article, but yeah. let's start with the USC basketball goats. And it's pretty simple. Okay. You got Cheryl Miller. She's quite possibly the greatest women's basketball player that there has been in her time and era. Juju Watkins is already there for me.
Yeah.
And then it gets a little interesting. Like Lisa Leslie's probably number three on that list. Or maybe number two. She's number two. And then Juju's probably number three right now. The McGee twins, you got Cynthia Cooper. Like there's been some input, Tina Thompson, some real big time players. So, but that would be my top three. I think Juju's already, you know, at the trajectory of her career, she's going to be in that top three as well. Maybe you could say she's not there just yet, as some of those others that have won national championships or had, you know, lengthy careers and then gone to the WNBA. But that's my top three right now for the women's. On the men's side, it's Harold Miner. Is, you know, Baby Jordan was such a dynamic player for USC. And then there's some question marks there, and I don't know the old guys well enough, but, you know, there's Hall of Famers from USC that played at USC. So you got to start looking at some of them. Rudemikin, I think is how you pronounce his name. And I'm sorry if I'm botching that. But you look at the rafters, you see the retired numbers and whatnot. And you know, Evan Mobley is probably the most talented player to come through USC, but obviously he was only there for 1 year, so it's hard to say what he did. The guy with the biggest impact in the last 30 years, or at least two decades, was Jordan McLaughlin. Like, he just changed the trajectory of the program. We talked about that a little bit earlier, but the fact that he came to USC, he was there for 4 years and is a point guard, and you see he's an undersized guy. He's like, he goes to the NBA and he's still been in the NBA for, I think, 8 years now, despite being a guy that is not your prototypical size and whatnot, and just continues to produce. And he is such a great ambassador. He and his wife, who was a member of the Spirit Squad when they were both at USC together, they're one of the power couples of USC history, I think.
Shotgun, there are more questions left, but they have to do with your birthday or birthday themed stuff. So I want to combine those into my birthday section, if that's okay with you. And then we'll do take it or leave it right now to get the USC stuff completed. And then we'll jump into this birthday section. Does that sound good?
I like how we have a USC podcast and you're like, we just got to get done with this USC stuff.
Yeah, I need to get rid of all of this. It's the end of the podcast. This back half is my part of the show, even though I've been hosting this whole time. I got to get to the fun section at the end. Does that make sense?
Go for it.
Okay. Take it or leave it time, Shotgun. Take it or leave it. Tobias Raymond will make a start this season.
Take it.
Taking it. Taking the big boy.
Injuries.
Take it or... Okay. You're banking on the injuries. They do happen. They do happen. We've seen it time and time again, especially in the offensive line. Injuries happen, which is why tackle depth is so important. Mm-hmm. Take it or leave it. USC can go through the season with four scholarship running backs.
Take it. Yeah. Like I said, especially if they get a quality walk-on, I think that would be that's the minimum they need to do. They need a good quality walk-on, and they've done it before, like last year. They had four last year, so why would they not do it again this year?
Take it or leave it. Jacoby Lane leads the team in touchdown receptions.
Ooh. I'm going to leave it.
Okay. You thought about it, though, which is all I care about doing, is making you at least think about it or go, oh.
I'm going to leave that. And Zach Branch is going to be the guy to lead him. I think he gets put in that Jordan Addison role where we get down towards the goal line. We have set up a play. We've devised a play for this week, for this matchup. And we're going to use Jordan Addison to get that touchdown. Remember early in the Utah game, or he's going to be the decoy for it. So you saw early they ran, I think it was a jet sweep motion, got the ball out to Jordan Addison. He scores a touchdown. Later in the game, they do the same motion. Defense chases after him, and you have Josh Follow wide open for a touchdown. But I think that Zach Branch is going to be that guy that we're going to design things around because of his unique skill set when we get down to the goal line, and then therefore he's going to get a couple more touchdowns that way, and he'll end up leading the way.
Not going to take it or leave it. This is a recruiting question. USC finishes with a top five high school recruiting class, not overall high school recruiting class. So number five right now. So they finish in the top five when it's all said and done.
I'm going out on the ledge here a little bit that the momentum that has been built is partially because they've said they've changed their ways with NIL. And so I'm going to go on a ledge and say that that continues. And with the momentum they have, I'm going to take it. You know, I think that they definitely can do it. If all things are equal across the nation, USC is very likely to have a top 10 recruiting class every single year. When things aren't equal is when your coach is on the hot seat constantly, like with Clay Helton, or everyone else is doing something, is providing something different than you. And that being NIL in the last couple of seasons. So if they're on par or whatever with everyone else, then I think I can take that one.
Into my final one, take it or leave it. USC baseball, kind of hot right now. USC baseball makes the tournament.
Now you put me on the spot, Chris.
I love it.
I got to talk with Andy Stankwitz later today, and I'm going to have to relay this to him. But of right now, I am leaving it. Now, they've got a ton of momentum, but they're in a huge hole. And now I've seen teams go on ridiculous runs. Like St. John's right now has not lost a game in their last, or they've only lost once in their last 21 games. But that's what kind of run it's going to take for USC to really get back in that mix. Now they're almost at 500, and that's a positive sign. They're at 9-5 in the Pac-12 standings. They're a half game out of 500. I mean, a half game back in the Pac-12 standings behind a couple of teams. So they're right there in the mix. But they're in such an early hole because they started 3-11, started 4-12. Now they've won 12-16, and that's how you even those things out. But you got to do more than be even to make it in the NCAA tournament. And the fact that they got left out last year doesn't, you know, bode well for what the committee thinks of them, I guess. They're playing great baseball right now. They're getting different contributions. And if they get everyone healthy and, you know, back on track, then they could go on a lengthy run. But as of right now, I'm going to leave it. Ask me the same question in 2 weeks, and, you know, my answer may change. They have a huge week. They actually have a huge week, real quick, Chris. And we'll talk about this on the Dato Download podcast, me and Jack. But they are playing Oregon, or they're playing UC Irvine, who may be the best team in the West outside of Oregon State. Oregon State's number 5 in the nation. USC beat them both games that they played them. USC doubled Oregon State's loss total. That tells you how good USC is playing right now. Oregon State had lost 2 games. Oregon State is now 26-4 on the season. 2 of those losses are USC. So half their losses have come against USC. USC went 2-0 against them. The second best team in the West, though, is probably UC Irvine. They are, I want to say they're like 24-4 right now. They are an outstanding team. They've got talented players. They had a player get drafted and said, I'm not signing. I'm coming back to UC Irvine. And they would have been even more talented. They lost a pitcher before the season that would have been their weekend rotation. But I digress. They're playing UC Irvine. The last game they're going to play in Los Angeles, I believe, this season, on Tuesday this week. Then they are going to go on the road to Oregon. I will be up in Eugene. I will be up in the Pacific Northwest catching games at a couple different spots. But they'll be up there. And it's a huge series against an Oregon team that at D1 Baseball, we just moved back into our rankings. They're ranked 18th. So can you go play on the road and win a series against a ranked team? Because you play UC Irvine, you play Oregon. Next week, you have San Diego and UC Irvine in the midweek. So this is a six-game stretch that is going to be critical for those chances. If somehow they go 6-0, Chris, you could ask me that same question next week, and I would say yes, they're making the tournament. But this is going to be a critical week for them, so we'll see how they do this week.
Shotgun, it is your birthday. It is time for the birthday section of the show at the end. Very excited.
I do want to point out that I did not ask for a birthday episode or a birthday section.
He did not. I knew he wouldn't, so I just have to do it myself. So I have to take it into my own hands. And I think what you just said sets up the first little birthday question, which comes from LA Sports follower. Sean, you strike me as a dude who doesn't like attention, but if someone baked you a cake, what kind would it be? I also had this question on my list of like, what is the top birthday cake option? So it sounds like these two are interlinked as far as the question goes, Shaka.
They are, but the answers would be different because you asked your top birthday cake and that would be ice cream cake. He asked if someone baked you a cake, you know, bake an
interesting
ice cream. First off, I do like attention. So, you know, I don't necessarily call attention to myself, but I do not mind attention at all. But if someone were to bake me a cake, my roommate often will bake something on my birthday. She likes to bake, so she likes to try different things out. And a couple of years ago, she made me an old fashioned cake. And by old fashioned, I mean bourbon and, you know, orange and bitters, and it was phenomenal. So that's been one of my favorites. I also am a big red velvet and German chocolate cake are two of my other favorites.
Shout out Red Velvet, an elite goated level cake. We have a question from SoCal, aka Fat Trojan. If any sports in USC athletics could win a natty for his birthday, not win a birthday for his natty, which sport would he choose? Football, basketball, or baseball?
Interesting. I think because I'm a man of the people, I know we have so many football followers. I think it would be football. I mean, just the hoopla that goes with it, I think is a unique, the confetti drop and everything like that. But, you know, it would be really fun to cover any national championship. I've been fortunate enough to cover a couple of, you know, College World Series, not a particular team, but just the event itself. And it's just so much fun seeing, you know, even before that, regionals and super regionals, and see a team's dogpile and win those conference championships. And just, you know, it's so fun to be around people when they win and that moment for them. So that'd be really fun. I would love to, you know, in a couple of years when the women of Troy win their national championship, I'd love to be there for that, for basketball. But yeah, baseball would be special too. But I think football, because I'm a man of the people, I want you all to get your football national championship. And the fact that it would shut up some of the SEC, you know, that didn't hurt either.
This one I feel like is for me, not really birthday related, but De La Cruz asks, which of Shotgun's favorite hats is your favorite? Which one do you have the fondest memory of? I would have to say the one me and Keely gave him at the final Family Feud episode, which we had. It's a minor league team, if I believe that's correct. It's the Chanclas. It's the Flying Chanclas.
The minor leagues each year, they have a Copa de la Vision, I think is what it's called, where they have kind of a Mexican themed. Each team will change their mascot for a game or a couple games. I don't know exactly how it does, but one of the teams in Texas does the chancla, you know, the abuela throwing the chancla at the grandkid or whatnot. Is a phenomenal hat, and you guys got a custom made with the feud on the side of it. So yes, I actually wore that 2 weekends ago, I think, on one.
So that's easily my favorite one. But when he rocks any like Orioles, or like he's wearing a Baltimore Towson hat right now, so that gets me excited. But yeah, the chancla is the elite one for me, and has the most fondest memory tied to it. Okay, Shotgun. Gustavo,
do I get to answer my favorite?
Oh well, I guess. Do you have a favorite hat? I assume we're on the same page. It's the same hat.
No, I have two favorites. One just design. I have a digital camo Atlanta Braves hat that I randomly found at like a Ross or a Marshalls or something for like $3. And it's one of my most worn hats. It just is completely different than any other thing else I have. And then I also have what I call my wedding hat. I had a custom made hat made that I wear to weddings, that goes with a couple of suits that I have. So, you know, it's got my signature on it. It's got a crest of arms, custom made. It's the shit. So that's probably my favorite one.
It is the shit indeed. Shotgun. Gustavo has a few take it or leave it's, and I have a few take it or leave it. So I'm just going to combine them together.
All right.
Take it or leave it. Restaurant staff singing happy birthday to you.
Take it. I'm all right with it.
Yeah. Really? Okay. I'm shocked, to be honest.
I don't mind. It's fun. It's whimsical. I feel bad if the restaurant staff isn't into it. But oftentimes they're like, hey, this breaks up my day. I get to come from the back of the kitchen, rather than, you know, like if it's in Waiting, the movie Waiting, if you've seen that one, Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, I have.
Then like, if that's the staff, then no, I don't want to be a part of it because they're not having fun. But if everyone's having fun, that's what it's about. So I'm okay with it. Take it.
I'm going to leave it. Celebrating your birthday after 30.
Take it. Everyone deserves one day a year.
There you go. Very wise. Put that on a bumper sticker. Take it or leave it. Big birthday, big party, or intimate gathering.
I'm down with either, just based on someone's personal preference. Whatever suits you as the birthday person. I like big parties, so that's what I would go with. You know, I like to mix and mingle and have different friend groups get together and they become friends, that type of thing. So I'm all about that action, boss.
This is basically take it or leave it, but I changed it to underrated, overrated. Okay. So I'm just going to ask you a thing. You're going to tell me if it's overrated or underrated. Right. Laser tag.
This is not what I expected.
What were you thought I was going to expect? What were you expecting? Laser tag, very popular birthday party.
Really?
When you're growing up. Are you not a laser tag?
Never did laser. I may have done laser tag like once, never for my birthday or anyone's birthday that I know of. So I'm going to say it's overrated if it's a very popular one.
Trick candles.
What was that? I didn't hear you.
Trick candles.
Oh, the ones that don't go out? Overrated.
Yeah. Overrated. Sleepovers.
Underrated. I still do sleepovers all the time because I'm a roaming nomad, so.
There you go. Chuck E. Cheese.
Underrated. I had so many Chuck E. Cheese tokens. This was actually my nieces and nephews. My sister would always have their birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese. So Papa Shot, I'd spend all my tokens on Papa Shot, basically. And I would save a couple to play one or two games, like the sit-in games or the shooting games. Everything else is going towards Papa Shot.
Bounce House.
I lived in Sherman Oaks across the street from the VNSO park for part of my time in LA.
Okay.
And on Saturdays during the spring, my roommate at the time and I would walk around and count how many bounce castles. So he would take the dog out for a walk. He would come back and give me an assessment. Like, I think there's gonna be about, he's like, there's five now. I think we're gonna get 11 today. There would sometimes be 11 bounce houses in the park all at once. So
that's a bounce house city. 11? That's a neighborhood.
Yeah, there were times when it would happen. But I still think they're underrated. Everyone has fun in a bounce house outside of the kid that gets smashed in the face.
I've my buddy's kid invites me to his birthday every year, and it's always a bounce house. And let me tell you, I have so much fun in that goddamn thing. So yeah, totally underrated. And the cool thing is they don't cost that much to rent for like a weekend. I am a grown man that has his own bank account. I can rent a bounce house at any time I want, Chuckin.
Well, that's why there's 11 in the park. And
what we right.
I actually have a family member here in New Jersey that owns their own bounce house. So for any,
rents it out?
They don't know. It's a smaller one. It's just kind of a backyard one. But so every time they have a birthday party, they have people over, whatever, for the kids, they will break out the bounce gals. And it's awesome.
When you were talking about your Sherman Oaks thing, I thought you were going to say your neighbor lived in a bounce house. Like his house was just
that would be a very house. LA moment. It just, yeah, my neighbor lives in the bounce house next door.
Yeah, I think I've posed this like hypothetical question. Like, could you live in a week? Could you live in a bounce house for a week outside of your normal house?
That'd be interesting. Like as a challenge type of thing, like
for $50,000, if you get through it, you get $50,000.
Yeah. As long as there's an inflatable bathroom somewhere.
You cannot leave the house whatsoever.
Yeah. Cause I've seen this on Twitter, right? It's like, oh, could you stay in your house for an introvert? You're like, yeah, that's my dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
But bounce house, that's a much more intriguing question. And yeah, I think it'd be fun.
All right, then. Chuckin thinks he can do it. I have three final questions for you. These aren't take it or leave it. These are just like your opinion or a memory. This is mainly referring to you as a child, or I guess your opinion on it. Number of candles or number candles? Does that make sense how I asked that?
Yeah. I think up to 10, you go number of, and then after 10, once you get to double digits, you go with the numbered candles.
Okay. Did you growing up have a go-to birthday? And I had mentioned with laser tag, that was like all my friends. Like that was the thing. We would just, if you had someone's birthday coming up, you were going to Shadowland laser tag. That was what you were doing for that birthday. Did you have a go-to birthday is what I'm saying?
You weren't roller skating, one of those.
No,
I think it's Chuck E. Cheese going for my nieces and nephews. Like, I think that was probably the one that I did most frequently for my.
But I mean, for you
personally, I think I didn't celebrate my birthday a ton. My birthday was always spring break in my schools, so
that makes me sad.
I think that. Well, I always said it is, hey, it's my birthday. I'm giving you guys a week off of school just to help, because I'm nice.
Damn.
I think we went bowling for my birthday a couple times. I like bowling, so
okay,
we'll go with that.
Okay, bowling, good option. I've done some bowling birthdays as well. And then my final gift, shotgun. I know this may be a tough question.
I'll be honest, Chris. I'm down for a bowling birthday at my current age as well. That just sounds fun. Everyone going drinking and bowling.
The thing about bowling in general is just like you get hungry and then like you eat and like you touch the ball and it's like this whole thing. Like
if you don't get good bowling alley French fries, have you really gone bowling?
No, you haven't. Yeah. But then like if you get wings and then like it's all like greasy, you know, and it's just like
wings. Wings seems like that you're taking it too far. Like greasing the ball is fine to me, you know, but when you had chicken, you have wing sauce.
It's not grease in the ball. It's coming out of the ball, shotgun. It's not the putting the grease in the ball. It's what's coming out.
Your fingers are greasy and then you're putting them in the bowling ball hole. So
you're collecting all the inner E. coli of the, you know, and then you're going, you're like, I just hit a spare, baby. Let me get a nice handful of French fries. You know, you're just, it's just this, this whole thing.
I don't know. After two high fives on your way too. So it's not the most hygienic of activities, I would say. When you if you don't own your own ball and, you know, have a towel, all that type of stuff, like if you're in a league player or something like
pound for pound, probably the most unhygienic activity you could ever do besides it's probably like dumpster diving, bowling, and then those are probably the top two
after dumpster diving.
I think it's up there. If you think I'm wrong, you know, someone can email in their own personal rankings. Shotgun, your last question is, do you have like a best birthday gift you've ever received?
Oh, best birthday gift. Ooh. I would have to think about this one, Chris. I don't have anything off the top of my head.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. I run the risk of something off the top not getting an answer because it's something you have to think about. But that's okay. That happens. That happened, shotgun.
I could give that you this for Christmas. I think we did this at Christmas and I knew the answer then.
I think so.
But, you know, when I got a TV and a Sega in the same Christmas, like, that was awesome. But birthday, off the top of my head. No.
Well, I'm going to get him a custom bowling ball with our faces. You know, like how you do the skulls in a bowling ball. I'm going to do that with our faces in the middle. Shotgun, that's going to wrap up
special. You know, if you want our faces, you can wear our faces. If you go.
Wear our faces.
You can get the Helium Boys podcast, the merchandise. Give the people, let the people know where they can get it at.
Yeah, if you want to celebrate Shotgun's birthday and get a piece of clothing with his face in it, and my face as well, you can go to theparastyleshop.com and get a hoodie or a shirt or a crew neck with the Helium Boys podcast. Again, I'm so excited to see those across the country, hopefully this season. So I'm very excited. Take that first picture with someone rocking it.
I've actually started thinking about some of the travel, and it's like, oh yeah, I need to book a flight to go to Detroit, and I need to figure out. I was just at Maryland this past weekend, still looking for that Chris Trevino plaque. It's messed up that I can't find it anywhere on campus. But I'm like, all right, I got to start reaching out to people and finding the hotspots of where to eat. I'm gonna try to do some kind of, you know, weekly thing for whenever USC fans are going into a new city, of letting you know the spots where you need to go eat, where it's
that's great,
the college spot or, you know, the fine dining, whichever. Try to get some info from some of the coaches and stuff that I know at these different places from baseball and basketball and whatnot. But started thinking about, like, oh god, I gotta start doing some of that research. I gotta start building it out because we're not that far away from USC playing at Michigan, at Minnesota, and at Maryland this year.
Are you coming to Vegas?
I will be in Vegas for sure. No doubt I'm missing that.
That's going to be an epic meetup.
Or no doubt.
Epic meetup.
All right. We'll see if the
epic
the
meetup. Let's have one. Let's have one. For Chris Trevino. Oh, shit. We'll have to see. Shotgun, this episode has gone too long, but that's okay. It's your birthday. A very special episode. Thank you for playing ball.
We have one final question that just came in. And I thought it was interesting, so I'll ask it. I'm asking this to you. So it's a one or two choice. Which would you prefer for USC? Ask Damian Draco. One, a zero loss USC team makes the college football playoff next year with the number one offense and the same old defense, or a 3 or 4 loss USC team that has a top 10 defense and looks fixed for the future.
What is the first part of that?
Number one was a zero loss USC team with the number one offense and the same old defense makes this college football playoff, or a 3 to 4 loss USC team that has a top 10 defense and looks fixed for the future.
So they're 12-0, 13-0. They win the Big Ten and they're going to the college football playoff. I mean, I'm taking that, right?
Yeah.
I'm taking that.
It's basically kind of a present versus a future question. Are you taking the present success, or are you banking on the future success with the second option? And I think you take the present because you never know what, you know, if you're Kentucky basketball, you would have taken the national championship this year rather than worrying about what would happen next year, because you never know when your coach is going to leave to go to Arkansas.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what the question is getting at, but like point blank, I think like 99% of USC fans are taking option one. You win the Big Ten, you're 13-14-0. You're probably a top two seed at this point. Yeah. And get a bye, and you're freaking rolling and recruiting if you're that record going to college football playoff. Yeah.
I don't know. Defense may not be. If it's the same old defense, that's the question.
So yeah, you're saying they're like 118 in scoring defense. Again, this is hyperbole or not hyperbole. It's a hypothetical. So yeah, I mean, I guess, but like you're 14-0, you win the Big Ten. So yeah, I'm taking that.
Yeah. You just take the wins.
Take the wins, avoid the losses. I am Chris Trevino. That is Shotgun Birthday Boy Spratling. Thank you for joining us for the Helium Boys podcast. We will be back sooner rather than later. We got to do some sort of a spring game preview or something. And I have a very fun off-season podcast that I want to do for kind of a preview. I've already mentioned a Shotgun. I haven't told him exactly what it is, but I'll give more details as that come. And then, Shotgun, we got to get ready for our top 30 most important lists. Fan favorite. We'll I think this time we'll try to do the podcast where we talk about it, our rankings, and then put that out there later. So lots coming up for this podcast. We're gearing back up for a busy rest of spring, summer, and then obviously the season is coming up, Shotgun. So any final words for you as a birthday boy?
Start thinking about that travel. You know, it's going to come sooner rather than later. My favorite thing to tell people on your birthday, only use this line. This is the best line ever if you're going to a bar or club or anything else, or just in general in life. Only use it on the correct day, though. But it's my birthday, and I love you. Give a simple high five to the person you're walking by. Let them know they are loved and that it is your birthday. Oftentimes, that results in you getting free drinks or free something along the way, because people want to help celebrate your birthday, especially if you are having a positive outlook. So that is my advice to everyone. When it is your birthday, use that line. Go have a great time. Hope we see you guys next time on the next episode. Thanks so much, Chris, for hosting this week and for giving me some birthday love. Love you guys out there, and looking forward to the rest of the off season, the rest of spring camp as we continue to go forward.